from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, recovery efforts are underway after one of the strongest typhoons in recorded history slammed into the Philippines on Friday, leaving many residents without food, water, or electricity. The southern city of Tacloban was reportedly hit the hardest by Typhoon Haiyan, with some early estimates saying as many as 10,000 people could be dead. We talk about the devastating aftermath and recovery efforts, and we'll hear reactions from the Bay Area Filipino community and look as well into the links of this devastating storm to climate change. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Super Typhoon Haiyan, now named Yolanda in the Philippines, hit the Philippine Islands on Friday with a devastating force of winds up to 190 miles per hour, spreading destruction and death. Thousands were killed, a half million are homeless, and two-thirds of the islands, as well as a million of its citizens, were affected by the sheer strength of the storm, which has been compared in power to the 2005 Katrina disaster and has been described as the strongest typhoon ever to hit land. Massive relief and humanitarian efforts have been underway, including the sending over by U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel of the USS Carrier George Washington, other ships, aircraft, and Marines to assist in search and rescue operations, and the delivery of emergency supplies. There have been major difficulties getting aid in, and we want in this hour to focus on some of the efforts and on what is being done and what you can do, as well as shed light, we hope, on how much this latest disaster is related to climate change. We want to go first to the nation's capital and welcome Robert LaPrade, who is Associate Vice President of the Division for Humanitarian Response of Save the Children USA. He also led emergency responses in Iraq, Darfur, and in response to the Asian and Japanese tsunamis, and he's now coordinating relief efforts to the Philippines. Robert LaPrade, good to have you with us on Forum.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for all of the work you're doing. Let me begin by asking you just about the difficulty of the scale of this and the logistics. It's, from everything I'm reading, been very hard and formidable just getting things in.
Absolutely. A lot of the islands in the Visayas region of the Philippines were really so wiped out that bridges between some of the islands, the port facilities, the airport facilities that normally are what allow aid agencies to actually get in and provide assistance have been wiped out. And then roads are blocked off, and it's very difficult to even get out and even do assessments to try to figure out what specific needs of different villages are. We see in the news a lot about Tacloban, the big city that was hit. But there are many, many other areas on other islands that we really see nothing about, even in the news, that are still yet to be actually gotten to and figured out what's going on.
Yeah, the focus has been a lot on Tacloban because at least 10,000 have been reported dead there. But these particularly coastal fishing communities and the other areas, as you suggest, have pretty much not had that focus of attention or not have the laser put on them. I'm just wondering, though, what we know in terms of needs for food, shelter, medicine, a safe place for children to sleep, families being separated. I mean, it's really pretty much across the board, and we are concerned also, are we not, about looting and public health problems?
Well, I think you hit on exactly the main problems that are the immediate needs. And you know, while this is definitely going to be a long-term recovery program, which we kind of know from lessons that we've learned from, you know, places like the Asian tsunami in Indonesia and Sri Lanka, really the focus for the next few weeks need to be on those kind of things, of getting people the most basics of, you know, food, shelter, and, you know, basic medicines and things like that. There are still a lot of places where, you know, clinics and hospitals or whatever were wiped out. I know that we're going to be working already in four clinics where we know that services are needed. So they really are across the board. Really everything is needed right now.
We're talking with Robert LaPrade, who's with us from D.C. and who is with Save the Children USA. And do you have, Robert LaPrade, specific figures? Because President Aquino, the president of the Philippines, said it was some 2,000 perhaps dead in Tacloban, not 10,000 as was originally reported.
Well, I mean, we don't. I mean, we're not really the numbers people on things like that. But I know from our what we can say is from our experience that these are the kind of things that really kind of emerge over a couple of weeks as other places are actually get to and people actually really more bodies are found and the numbers start getting through the system. You know, you can imagine even the local governments and others are in a lot of chaos, and some of the numbers collecting is maybe not top of their agenda. It's actually providing, you know, food and water to people that need it right then.
But a lot of the food is not getting through, I understand, because of looting and because people are so desperate for food that they're taking food as soon as it even reaches a spot where it's needed.
Well, I think it does show the level of desperation. It really is horrible. I mean, we are encouraged by a couple of things. The flights actually will start in the morning, 24 hours a day. We understand into Tacloban Airport, commercial flight, so that will allow aid workers as well as supplies to get in. There are some logistics things, both by plane as well as sea, that are being looked at through Philippines military, U.S. military, and others. So it's not there, but things are starting to kind of get into place that can allow more than kind of drips and drabs of aid, but actually supply fairly large numbers with those most basics.
Speaking of large numbers, there's been certainly a lot of money pledged. United Nations, $25 million. The Arab Emirates, United Arab Emirates, $10 million. I mean, can all that money really make a difference here? Because we are talking about such devastation.
Well, every dollar makes a difference for sure, I mean, I think that the appeal. Sometimes when appeals first come out, it's a little bit of a just kind of a mark in the sand, I don't know, to try to put a placeholder. And then as assessments tend to be done, you know, the first things is just really meeting these basic needs and finding where the most critical needs are. And then it's through those assessments, usually in the first week or two, that the real numbers about what the real need is start to emerge, both for the, you know, initial first, you know, kind of phase, and then also for a longer-term recovery.
What's the best way for people to help, and how can they know, really, that any dollars they do give are going really right to the cause that's so in need?
Well, I don't know. You know, I tend to suggest that they, you know, look for organizations that are on the ground and have worked in places, you know, in the Philippines, in this case, for a while. I know, like Save the Children, we had 100 staff on the ground, Filipinos that know the local culture and know the systems and things like that. So look for organizations that have that kind of experience. I think usually contributions of cash really are the best things, because that way supplies and other things can be bought within the country. It's cheaper that way. It's usually more culturally appropriate and things like that, rather than, you know, have kind of collections of things and then send them over.
Robert LaPrade, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Robert LaPrade, again, is Associate Vice President of the Division for Humanitarian Responses of Save the Children USA, and he's now coordinating relief efforts to the Philippines. We want to put some focus on the Bay Area Filipino community's response to Typhoon Haiyan, and also talk with Jeff Masters, who is a meteorologist. And let me say hello to you, Jeff. Jeff is with Wonderground, a commercial weather service that provides real-time weather information via the Internet. We're going to talk with him about climate change and the effects it's having on, and that had really, on this typhoon. Jeff, good to have you.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you back on Forum. I also want to tell you that we have Terrence Vallon here with us in studio, who is president of the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns. And welcome to the program, Terrence Vallon.
Thank you.
I also want to welcome Lilibeth Acera, and she is a member of the Filipino community of Sonoma and Napa County. She joins us by phone this morning as well. Lilibeth Acera, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Cesar Torres, we'll say good morning to also, who's with us by phone, retired professor of political science at the University of Philippines. He'll be joining us shortly. He returned actually in late October from the Philippines right before the typhoon hit. Terrence Fallon, let me go to you here. It's actually been inspiring how this local community has rallied. Huh?
Yeah, here in the Bay Area, we're part of a National Alliance for Filipino Concerns, NAFCON, effort that's been doing this for a few years now. We've raised over $100,000, mostly through a grassroots strategy that we were talking about earlier. And we've got folks on the ground in the Philippines who are already prepared because of the earthquake that just happened a few weeks ago and has been doing this for several years now. And so what they had talked about earlier of folks on the ground who've been living and working in these communities for a long time are ready to actually move into some of these devastated areas with knowledge of the terrain, the local communities. And that's, you know, is the most direct way to get relief there, is to work with these kind of partner organizations, grassroots effort like what's happening. And the Bay Area has really stepped up. Folks are offering whatever resources they have, ready and willing to do fundraisers at restaurants, concerts, even celebrity events, and to work with NAFCON to make sure that those donations 100% are going to grassroots communities in the Philippines. That is the real strategy for rebuilding, even beyond the relief and rehabilitation that's needed right now.
How many people are going to the Philippines, actually?
So we're actually organizing medical missions right now with national nurses unions, and so we're organizing medical missions to go into these areas and working with local health workers in the Philippines. So Alliance for Health Workers in the Philippines is going to be hosting them. We're just setting up the logistics of a reception point so that they can go in, and they've already got distribution points set up very close to the Visayas Islands, and folks who know Samar, Leyte, Panay Islands, and are ready to go in there as kind of the distribution points for some of these relief efforts.
Now, you've got a vibrant Filipino community right here in the Bay Area, a very strong, rooted community. But a lot of this local fundraising, a lot of the support you're getting is from outside the community as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Bay Area has, you know, approximately 1 million Filipinos around the whole Bay Area, and folks have really stepped up. Having done this for a few years now, we're doing exactly what we were talking about earlier, primarily cash donations for now. But yeah, folks are coming out left and right to help out with whatever they can.
Politically left and right too. Huh?
Yes, yeah. From all different directions, you know, offering whatever they can to support the Filipino people. And it's inspiring to see, you know, not just Filipinos in the Bay Area, but everyone ready and willing to help out.
So if people want to help out, they can do it how?
So we've got an online system through our website, www.nafconusa, NAFCONUSA.org. And through that, we've got, you know, an online system of donations that's already raised close to $70,000 in immediate donations. And folks are able to donate that way. And we're coordinating with folks organizing events to also coordinate funds through that. And again, it's going directly to a program in the Philippines, a network of NGOs, schools, and churches called BALSA, Bayanihan Alay sa Sambayanan, or People's Cooperation for the People. So it's a real people-to-people organization. It's an organization and community-to-community effort.
Should also mention there was a 7.2 earthquake just 4 months ago, so we're coming off of that, and there are, you know, staggering problems for President Aquino. Is your organization in touch with actually the Philippine government?
I know, so we worked kind of around what the government operations have been doing. In some of the past devastation, we've heard that, you know, the distribution of goods has been held up, for instance, by customs. We sent a cargo container over there in 2009, and, you know, some of that relief didn't get out for a month or more. And so, and then also in the recent earthquakes in 2012 and typhoons, some of the relief was held up by requiring people to register and give their names before getting relief. And the people rose up against that and said, we need this relief and we don't need to register in bureaucratic red tape. We need the relief now.
Let me say, by the way, that I said 4 months ago. I meant 4 weeks ago. It was just a month ago.
Right.
Terrence Fallon, again, is president of National Alliance for Filipino Concerns. We also have Lilibeth Acero with us, who's a member of the Filipino community of Sonoma and Napa counties. And Lilibeth Acero, what's the response been up there in the north?
Well, first of all, good morning. Thank
you. Good morning.
For including me to your talk show today, that I have to convey that right now, truly, the prayers of the people has been answered. And I'm
emotional. I understand.
Actually, a direct kind of like I have my relatives there. My mother's side comes from Tacloban City and Samar, and so does my husband also, of a third generation, but his grandparents from the father's side hails from Samar. So right now, I can agree to all the, I mean, I am so overwhelmed with all the the help and the inquiry of other people that how can they help. So may I add to the statement to the previous speakers that actually since when people ask me right now, because everybody wants to help, truly when you see the pictures, it's very graphic and like this morning, before I talked to you, it's evening there, and I talked to some of the connections already that we have already.
Forgive me, have you been in touch with your relatives? Have you been able to contact them?
But there are still three families that we are looking in, specifically in Tacloban City. And that is the city, but that's where the hardest, we don't have communication at all, because the landlines are not, we cannot get through. And even if they have their cell phones, we don't know if they have their cell phones with them or not. So the people that I have connected to are from the Summer side. And one of them went to the Tacloban City. They crossed the bridge, and they could not find anybody there yesterday. So again, it's evening there. They will try again today. So it's like us, the U.S. are the post, command post, commanding everybody there, you know, what's happening. And actually, I have to give you also the accounts of my personal accounts, because I'm glad that every one of you are so concerned. But being from the personal perspective, it's like when this thing happened, of course, we're very concerned, praying that it will not really go that way. And now it happened. So I really give it to the services of our U.S. American Citizen Services at the U.S. Embassy, that within 24 hours, they get back to you. And even to the people that are asking me how to connect with them. And indeed, they give them the accounts that whatever they find, they report to you.
But food and medicine now, you said prayers have been answered. Food and medicine now is getting through. I think that's what I'm reading from what you're saying. Whereas before it was speculating it would take 3 to 4 weeks sometimes to get food and medicine through.
If I give you another story that this is very nice and give you an inspiration, it says, the island, I'll give you a picture of that place, the connecting of that bridge, that actually there is another side, that's a rich area there, beautiful place. And actually, Tacloban City is one of the very well-developed city in the Philippines. The infrastructure is there. So anyway, that's why we have a lot of multinationals living in that area, both Tacloban and Samar, as well as a lot of Americans and Filipino-Americans who are there as retirees. So when this thing happened, it's like they have a boat that got stuck somewhere there, and they pushed that boat to cross to the other side of the island, and they walk all the way to the city called Catbalogan, towards the north, and that's when they got the signal of the cell sites at the time. And at the time, I also was able to intercept through the Department of Local Interior there, the director, and they dispatched food, immediate food and water, but it's only good for 2 more days, they said, 2 more days and no more. So they need food, they need medicine, because people are sick. And that island, Hinamok Island, there are 43 dead people accounted right now, and hundreds are missing. The house of my family there, they are on the second floor. They house 100 people. How they fit in that 100, about three-bedroom house, a second story. 100 people huddled there to survive this harrowing typhoon. You know?
Lilibeth Acera, thank you for that compelling narrative. And I know that you're going through a lot of personal concern here, deep concern. And I hope the best for you and your family. And I wanted to bring Jeff Masters into this, who's a meteorologist. Before, Jeff, we talk about this in terms of climate change. In Warsaw, as I'm sure you know, the UN summit on climate talks was going on. And the Philippines envoy, Nadarev Sano, also known as Yeb, broke down into tears, describing what his country was going through and how little he knew about what was happening to his relatives in Tacloban.
That's right. It was an impressive show for the delegations there, somebody who's, you know, suffering personally from a disaster that we might expect to see grow more common in future decades.
I wanted to hear actually a cut of him speaking. Danny, if we could play that.
It's staggering. I struggle to find words even for the images that we see on the news coverage. And I struggle to find words to describe how I feel about the losses. Up to this hour, I agonize, waiting for word to the fate of my very own relatives. What gives me renewed strength and great relief is that my own brother has communicated to us and he had survived the onslaught. In the last 2 days, he has been gathering bodies of the dead with his own two hands. He is very hungry and weary as food supplies find it difficult to arrive in that hardest hit area.
And we should mention that the brother that Nader Afsano Sato refers to had not eaten in 3 days, and so Nader Afsano, who is the negotiator for the Philippines, went on a 3-day hunger strike and also demanded that the United Nations get into climate change talks. And, you know, what's concerning to many is this is all being co-sponsored by the World Coal Association as one of the sponsors, which almost seems beyond belief. But let's talk with you, Jeff Masters, about just how much climate change played into this huge typhoon.
We understand that the planet has warmed and the oceans have warmed. They've put more water vapor into the atmosphere. The difference in temperature between the pole and the equator has changed, which has altered jet stream patterns. So every event that happens now in our atmosphere has been fundamentally modified by climate change. Now, with respect to hurricanes and typhoons, there's more heat energy available in the ocean because of the warmer oceans. So in theory, the storms have more energy to draw upon. Hurricanes are heat engines. They draw energy out of the ocean and convert it to the energy of their winds. When you heat up the ocean, you potentially make the situation where you can have the strongest storms get stronger. And that's what our climate models tell us. That's what atmospheric theory tells us, that by 2100, we should see between a 2% and 11% increase in intensity of these storms. But what's controversial is whether we're seeing a change now. And the database that we use to track these storms is simply not good enough to tell whether we're already seeing a change in the most intense cyclones.
Well, in many respects, there does seem to be in many people's minds a cause and effect. And again, it gets down to the necessity of cutting off emissions and going after sustainable development. I mean, this has all pretty much been outlined for us by all of those who have been looking at climate change.
We're messing with the basic life support systems of the planet. We're doing a high-risk sort of thing here. And one of the high risks that we might be seeing is making these sorts of storms more common.
Can you give us, we're coming up on a break here, but can you give us a kind of picture of this typhoon? I mean, how big it was and where it hit and what caused it?
It was big enough to fill the whole Gulf of Mexico. It was the size of Katrina, almost. It was more intense than Katrina. It had top winds, the strongest we've ever measured since we started putting satellites up in the air. And what's really remarkable is it hit land at that intensity. I mean, usually when these storms get close to land, the frictional effects start to wear them down and they weaken, but not with Haiyan. It came in full force, 195-mile-per-hour winds in the Philippines.
Jeff Masters with us again from Ann Arbor, Michigan, this morning, meteorologist with Wonderground. You may want to join us if you have questions or comments about the typhoon, if you want to know how to respond, if you want to, in fact, find out about organizations and what you can do, call us. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone calls. Again, call us now at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Recovery efforts are underway after one of the strongest typhoons in recorded history slammed into the Philippines on Friday, leaving many residents without food, water, or electricity. The southern city of Tacloban was reportedly hit the hardest by the typhoon Haiyan, which is now being called Yolanda in the Philippines. And we're talking about the devastating aftermath and recovery efforts and getting reactions from the Bay Area Filipino community. We're also talking about the relationship of climate change to this, and we certainly welcome your involvement in the program. You can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We talked earlier with Robert LaPrade from the Save the Children USA. He's Associate Vice President of Humanitarian Response and is leading the continuing relief efforts of the Philippines. Terrence Vallon with us in studio is president of the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns, and Lilibeth Acera is member of the Filipino community of Sonoma and Napa counties, and Jeff Masters is with us, meteorologist with the Weather Underground, weather service that provides real-time weather information via the internet. I'm going to bring your calls and emails in. First, I want to go to Cesar Torres, who is a retired professor of political science at the University of the Philippines and who just returned in October from the Philippines right before the typhoon hit. And Cesar Torres, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
I guess, can you talk about your family there? What do you have relatives missing as well? I mean, I just want to make this personal for people so they realize just how many people in the Filipino community are being hit.
Well, a cousin has died. He probably drowned. He did not leave his house when the other members of his family evacuated to higher ground. Their house is, beside San Juanico Strait, that is the seaside of Tacloban City. And of course, I've got lots of relatives. I've got lots of friends in Western Samar, in Gatbalogan, for instance, and in Tacloban. I've got lots of friends in Tacloban because I organized the University of the Philippines in Tacloban.
Is the sense, you're a political scientist, but is there a feeling strongly that this is related to climate change, that the devastation was much stronger because of climate change?
Oh, yes, definitely. I came to America in 1985, 1185. I could not stay there. I was afraid of the beautiful Halcyon days of the conjugal dictatorship. The folks in DAFCON would know about this. So I had to leave the Philippines, my family, my daughter and my son, and of course my wife. I feel it's different. The heat is so much. Imagine from 1985. I went back in 2010, and it was just so hot. I went back in 2011, and I was there, of course, 3 months ago, for 3 months, and I was always sweating. Especially, it's terrible if you come from San Francisco and you go to the Philippines, and you go to the towns and places beside the sea.
You've also said, I believe, that you're trying to get through some communications, or there is some communications through CNN and through Chinese television. But I believe you also mentioned Facebook. How is Facebook getting communications?
Oh, Facebook. I've got 3 accounts in Facebook. Because my organization, the Worldwide Filipino Alliance, we would like to mobilize the 11 million Filipinos in diaspora. The Filipinos who are roaming the world so that they can provide food, clothing, shelter, human dignity to their folks back home. There are some information that are not being discussed. You know, events, happenings in Samar and in Tacloban and in Leyte that are not being discussed by CNN, by CCTV, by the major broadcast organizations in America. And you get this from Facebook. You know, people they walk, for instance, from a distance of 173 kilometers from Tacloban to Gatbalogan. Along the way, they met with somebody, and then the somebody is connected to the internet. They go to an internet cafe, and then they post what they heard, what they have seen along the way. So these are not covered by CNN, by the major television networks.
And Cesar Torres, again, is a retired professor of political science at the University of the Philippines. I want to bring our listeners into this. And Forrest, let me begin with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, please.
I'm with a small NGO based in San Francisco that's been working for the last 9 years in Bohol, and we were on site at the time of the earthquake doing our regular medical care there, and responded, of course, to the earthquake by going to the areas of Bohol that were especially hard hit. There were thousands of people who were homeless and who were living outside. I'm most concerned about that group of people now that the typhoon hit. Although Bohol did not take a direct hit, many of the people were affected by the who were living outside without adequate facilities, without sanitation, without food, without water, in makeshift tents. And the concern about that group of people, although it's not the group that's getting the most attention as a result of the typhoon, I'm still concerned about that group of people and what's going to happen to them. I'm wondering if any of your guests have heard about the impact on the earthquake victims.
Terrence Fallon, can you help us?
Yeah, we've heard, I've actually heard also through Facebook, through relatives, that Cebu, northern Cebu and Bohol are relatively okay because of the due to the impact of the typhoon. But definitely after the earthquake, several were impacted and are homeless.
Cebu is near Tacloban, isn't it?
The island is close by, so the group of islands there, Cebu, Bohol, they're close by, but weren't as hard hit as Leyte, Samar, Panay, some of those islands. And so the group of you know, individuals who are affected by the earthquake, you know, some of them are okay. I'm sure, like everybody, they're also looking for support and relief because the earthquake just happened a few weeks ago and they haven't been stabilized. And that's what's needed right now. The immediate focus needs to be on relief and rehabilitation. In the medium term, it's going to be livelihood and rebuilding communities. And that's what those communities in Bohol and Cebu were in the midst of, starting to rebuild their lives and their communities again. But that infrastructure really needs support over the medium term. It's just with this recent typhoon, it wiped them out again. And we hear another typhoon is on its way. So, you know, all of this is pointing to the fact that the government at all levels needs to be better prepared for this and actually respond more effectively on the ground with local communities who've been building these efforts. Like the NGO you talked about, it's probably folks on the ground who are best in a position to figure out what to do to prepare communities going forward.
And let me thank the caller and go right to another call. And that's you, Robin. You're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. One comment I had really was, I think that for listeners or particularly people in the members of the Filipino-American community, is just sort of raising questions about kind of which organizations they do decide to send relief through. I mean, I think one of the big issues for me is that the Philippine government has proven itself to be completely inadequate, unprepared. I mean, just the level of corruption that we're seeing that has come out in the last few months, I think that efforts like the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns, as an example of a sort of grassroots, people-to-people connections, or the NGO also that was mentioned earlier, I think that these are the kinds of efforts that we need to be supporting as a community to really, really ensure that people are being supported the way that they need to be.
Well, thank you for that, Robin. In fact, let me go back to Lilibeth Acera from the Filipino community of Sonoma and Napa counties. I'm reading a tweet here, Lilibeth Acera, that says, I recommend donations through faith communities when possible. International infrastructure exists and is already paid for. Typically, 100% of donations go to the needs on the ground. Would you agree with that?
Mike, thank you so much that you get back to me because, you know, I'm... how we address those donations first is this. I recommend, this is my recommendation, and I think so that everybody, like including myself, don't have really the faith that the government will administer the aid properly to the victims. But first, when people ask me, do you know somebody there? And if you don't know anybody, do you know someone who knows somebody there that is a victim? That's where you give your help, because you know that your every cent.
You
of
mean
your,
personal rather than an organization? You're recommending personal donations.
And then secondly, there are some reputable organizations and in the Bay Area, but likewise in Vallejo. Actually, I have to correct that. Napa Solano County is really where my community is, and that's why our community here is very mobilized in many of all those tragedies and disasters in the Philippines, we always do our own fundraising here. And as a matter of fact, this December 1st, the Vallejo elected officials and here in Vallejo, they spearheaded this fundraising specifically for the typhoon Yolanda Haiyan. But actually, there's this coming Saturday, November 16, we also have a fundraising effort for Bohol. So there's one after another. But anyway, I really encourage everybody that first you ask any Filipino that have, mainly it's actually the church.
Yeah, again, I want to confirm what you're saying here, that that the personal connection is always the best. And and I thank you for that. And the listener who suggested going through faith organizations also is making, I think, a worthwhile suggestion, don't you, Terrence Fallon?
Yeah, I mean, church communities have always been a foundation in the Philippines. But, you know, as much as possible, it's people who are organizing themselves and organizing coordinated efforts to actually rebuild communities. Churches are a part of that. We work with schools and NGOs on the ground. And it really has to be a people-led effort. You know, the government really needs to support that as much as possible. Like, we're organizing, tomorrow is dubbed an International Day of Solidarity and Action for the victims of Haiyan Yolanda in the Philippines. And so we'll be having a press conference tomorrow. But Wednesday, November 13th, is an International Day of Coordinated Action across the world.
Let me go to a couple of emails here, Jeff Masters, about the whole question of climate change. Jennifer writes, a guest from the Weather Underground mentioned the comparable size of the recent typhoon in the Philippines to that of Hurricane Katrina. I would caution such a comparison as the major damage done in New Orleans and surrounding areas was not the result of a hurricane, but that of flooding from poor engineering.
The greatest loss of life was due to the failure of the levees in New Orleans. The loss of life in Mississippi was due to the highest recorded storm surge we've ever seen from a hurricane. 28 feet came inland there. So the damage that Katrina did was pretty much unprecedented due to a storm surge. And I think it's a valid comparison because the storm surge damage from Haiyan was also unprecedented in the Philippines. And that's what did the most of the killing.
Let me go to another email for you, Jeff, if you would. Listener named Irvin writes, it seems to me that rather than contemplating the connection between extreme weather and climate, it would make far more sense to consider vulnerability to extreme weather events and climate change. The former is speculation, the latter is fact.
Yeah, we need to talk about two elements of climate change, how we adapt to it, and then how maybe we can lessen it by cutting down our emissions of carbon dioxide. We certainly have to adapt. With rising sea levels, with potentially stronger storms, we need to move away from the coast, give up a little bit of the coast, maybe armor our coast, put in seawalls where it makes sense to do so, not develop barrier islands. All these common sense sort of things are going to have to happen more and more, or we're going to see larger and larger disaster losses in the coming decades.
A couple of other questions via email, and let me go to you on this, Terrence Fallon. Terrence Fallon, again, is president of the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns. Patricia says, thank you for asking about how to offer relief, but I have a couple questions. What is the Philippine government doing? I'm troubled by their response or even having storage and supplies in those remote regions above the waterline. Can they not get supplies via boats to these remote locations? The typhoon happened on Friday, our time. Seems whichever countries are closest to supplies, food, and help are first responders. And meanwhile, our country and others further out from supplies come in behind.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the Philippine government's response has been sort of already under criticism, even just a basic thing of a warning system. So when the Philippine government, you know, set out to warn different communities, and the whole country essentially is coastline, so it's hard to say that we have to give up some of the coast. But, you know, those islands in particular, the 7,100 islands in the central part in particular, they're saying it's hard to reach, but people can get there. And we've set up through our partners in the on the ground in the Philippines distribution points that are very close to these central islands from Cebu and Bicol, and they're able to access this because they know the terrain and they know the navigation routes between the islands. So folks on the ground are the best in a position to respond to that. And, you know, the infrastructure of the Philippine government in responding to this situation, the vulnerability, when they, for instance, they mentioned that stormwater surges are on the way, the people in those areas didn't understand what a surge meant, meaning they weren't prepared, and they didn't explain in the kind of the local, culturally competent, and you know, way that people could really understand what was coming their way. So the warning system wasn't in place. And then the recovery. And as folks have mentioned, it is a combination of a man-made and natural disaster, not being prepared, but also the level of logging, deforestation, and mining caused landslides and flooding on an unprecedented level, given these recent, you know, increased typhoons and the increased severity of them.
It's amazing just to look at all the mud and debris. I mean, and you think about Katrina, this is a third world country that we're talking about as compared to Katrina. And another listener wants to know if, just getting back to the Philippine government for a moment, says Typhoon Haiyan was the fourth typhoon to hit the Philippines this year. And why is the government apparently so unprepared to handle the Tacloban disaster? Is the government simply out of resources?
Yeah, and it's also not in a position to be able to respond to these local efforts. And, you know, the President Aquino, we heard, was critical of local governments and their inability to respond. But it's from the top down. And to hear that, you know, the recent scandal and why people are concerned about giving money to the Philippine government is because it's been exposed that a lot of even relief funds from past typhoons have gone into the pockets of corrupt politicians. So there's a pork barrel scandal right now that's plaguing the country, and people are very concerned about giving to the government because they're worried that it's not going to go to the communities, which it hasn't in the past. And so that's why working with folks who are on the ground in local communities and grassroots efforts is probably the best way, and helps the communities to position themselves to build an infrastructure to respond. The people and the faith-based one is good, but to build infrastructure going forward, it has to come from the communities and the ground up, and the Philippine government needs to support that and international communities. Community as well.
And maybe, Jeff Masters, we can get some wisdom from you about the necessity of financing developing countries with respect to doing something about climate change.
Absolutely. Every dollar you spend preparing against future disasters is multiple dollars that you save after the fact in a situation like this, trying to, you know, do recovery from the disaster. So we definitely need to invest in third world poverty sort of elimination sorts of efforts and increase our infrastructure and ability to respond to disasters.
And we'll bring another caller in. John, join us. You're on the air. Good morning. Oops. John, are you there?
Hello, how are you doing? Yeah, I'm here. Thank you very much for taking my call. That was my question. I think you kind of semi-already answered it. It was basically with the Philippines being like one of the most corrupt countries people know of, with, you know, the black market ivory with the Catholic Church and for years. I was wondering what would be like a really good, what could you tell us, just a simple one organization, maybe one that's really good that you could give money or help to, that would be, it would go to the people. That's my question, is just if there is one, and what would be the best solid way to make that happen due to the Philippines, and like you just said apparently a few minutes ago, it is highly corrupt.
Well, we mentioned, you know, working through people you know. We've mentioned faith organizations, the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns, which is here represented by Terrence Vallon, certainly the Red Cross. Terrence, you want to add any?
Red Cross. Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I would just say that to, you know, our community efforts, you know, it's been concrete efforts that have, you know, partnered with, for instance, the city of San Francisco sent a $50,000 donation to a nonprofit organization, NGO in the Philippines, that helped to build a water system, built the strength of the community through disaster preparedness and community rehabilitation. So those kind of efforts would have full accountability. We've got reports from the NGOs on the ground back to the San Francisco city government, and the FCC, where I work, the Filipino Community Center here in San Francisco, is a member of NAFCON. And those are the kind of efforts we feel that are going to help rebuild the communities and the country from the ground up. And so our efforts, you know, are ones that in particular folks can support through NAFCONUSA.org.
And let me ask listeners, if in the time remaining, if you know someone in the Philippines and how you're getting in contact or trying to get in contact, and have you ever been there, and what do you think about the pictures you're seeing from there with all this devastation? And again, you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or you can tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. Let me bring Bob on next. Bob, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? I want to really give my sympathy to everybody involved in this. I just wanted to bring up one point on a technical level that's been bugging me lately. I'm kind of a tree hugger and trying to figure out the purpose of these large forests that are leaving. And so I'm looking at this large delta T that we're getting, and these are just heat engines, and coming up with the concept of, did the forests that they're taking out have a particular point in keeping the delta T down by buffering? and without the buffering of the forest, that's why we're getting these superstorms. Thank you.
Yeah, what's the relationship of deforestation, Jeff Masters, if you could outline that for us, connected?
The deforestation, well, has an impact on how fast the rains run off from the storm. So you get bigger floods and the faster hitting floods when you've got a deforested hillside. Whether the deforestation actually impacts the atmosphere in which these storms form, I think that's probably a small effect, at least in the Western Pacific.
And I have a listener here who asks whether, has anybody heard from Imelda Marcos? After all, she's from Leyte. And to help my, this listener says, my family has foregone Christmas presents this year to be able to give to those in need, which is really quite touching. And Terrence Vallon, any word on Mrs. Marcos?
I have no information about how she or her family is doing. But, you know, the communities of Leyte, Samar, Panay, you know, are devastated. So, you know, I imagine my own family also is from Tacloban City, a city right on the bay of Leyte. And so Leyte, the whole island, I think, is where the figure of 10,000 comes from. And we've heard closer to 12,000. And that, you know, 300 are known dead in Samar, which is one of the poorest provinces in the whole country, the third poorest province.
What other parts, though, as I said, there's been, Tacloban has had a lot of focus on it. What other, and I mentioned the fishing villages and the coastal region and so forth. What other parts urgently need help?
Right. What I just mentioned, Samar and the eastern side of Samar, again, one of the poorest regions in the country, was one of the first islands. That's the first island that it passed through and then went through Leyte, Tacloban City, and then also Panay Island. So those three groups of islands. But cutting a swath across the middle of the country, affecting 36 different provinces and 4 million people in those 36 provinces.
And Jeff Masters, it made it to Vietnam, but a lot of the velocity and force had been taken out of it by that time, right?
Fortunately, yes, it was only a Category 1 storm when it hit Vietnam. Still was able to cause $700 million in damage to China, to agricultural regions, and kill over 20 people in Vietnam and China.
And China, we should mention, I believe, has donated $100,000, which seems fairly inconsequential as far as Chinese wealth is concerned. But let me get another caller on whose family is involved here. Francis, join us, please.
Hi, yeah. So my family is in Tacloban City right now. The news that I got from yesterday was from my mom, and she was saying that they're hungry, they're out of water. The pumps that they usually have for water is all contaminated, so they're just using it to take showers and stuff. So far, they were walking down about 4 hours to southern Leyte to find food. Not sure if they were successful or not, but that's the situation there now.
So how are you in contact? You're able to talk?
We are able to talk with them about 10 minutes a day. They have to wait in line to charge their cell phone batteries in Tacloban City. There's a long line for power outlets. Once we do get a hold of them, their battery dies out right away because they're only able to charge them for a few minutes. But yeah, they do have some cell phone signal in the city, past the city, southern, no cell phone signal available.
Well, good luck to you, Francis. I hope things work out, and I appreciate your calling us. Looking at an email here from a listener named Rochelle who says, I'm not sure if this has already been brought up, but the California Nurses Association and National Nurses United has a program called RNRN. It stands for Registered Nurse Response Network, and they send nurses to disaster areas and are currently recruiting nurses to go to the Philippines. Donations can be sent to rnresponsenetwork.org to help send nurses to the affected areas. And this is pretty much what you're trying to do, Terrence Vallon, is actually send people.
Yeah, we're actually coordinating with National Nurses United and CNA to have the team ready in the Philippines to receive them once they get over on transport over there. And again, like, it's amazing. Already 370 nurses or more have already signed up in just a matter of hours when they put out that call for nurses to go over. And we know that Filipino nurses are deployed throughout hospitals throughout the country. So they're ready and willing to go to the Philippines, especially ones who can speak the language. And so we're coordinating with them to with NAFCON USA to send folks over there and for them to be received by the Alliance for Health Workers in the Philippines, a grassroots.
The language is Tagalog mainly, not Spanish.
Tagalog, and then in the Visayan area, it's actually Visayan. So there's multiple languages in the Philippines, but in the Visayan area, but Tagalog is a national language, Filipino.
And at this point, I mean, what about communication? I mean, just making contacts and being able to talk to these people from stateside.
Yeah, people are finding whatever ways they can. Some are able, like the caller mentioned, to speak to their relatives 10 minutes at a time. A lot of people are reaching out through social media, which, you know, has allowed people to connect. My own family in Cebu area have been able to just give updates that they're okay. But so a lot of our community members have not heard from their families. A brother down in Southern California hasn't heard from his family, and it's been 5 days, and they're from Leyte. And then Samar also, which is, again, one of the poorest areas, they don't have the same level of communications and internet access as some of the other regions. So not hearing from Samar, some of our community members are still very anxious about what's happening.
And the lack of food and the lack of water and the lack of medicine are the top priorities and remain the top priorities.
Yes, you know,
and housing.
Yeah, definitely shelter. And, you know, we're coordinating, you know, companies are actually approaching us. I've got 30,000 tents ready to go in the Far East. You know, it's a matter of finding the resources to actually bring those materials over as quickly as possible. So stuff locally can be purchased. And that's why monetary donations are the most important right now, so that they can get there quickly as possible from, you know, the local area and surrounding countries. And then going forward, the communities on the ground will tell us what's most needed, and we can send shipments of more in-kind and material goods over there. But for right now, monetary donations are critical.
Any final wisdom from you, Jeff Masters, in terms of avoiding or trying to prevent something of this nature as best we can in the future?
Boy, yeah, we got to improve our job of communication, because the people of Tacloban were not expecting a storm surge. They were not expecting winds like a EF3 tornado, and that's the big thing we need to be doing.
We're talking about 190-mile-per-hour winds, really, aren't we?
Winds that's up over to ocean, over yeah. land, they were probably 15% less, so I was computing it was kind of like a high-end EF3 tornado, which will destroy any well-built home.
And the storm surge was really right a great deal of destruction, correct?
Yeah, the storm surge was probably about 15 feet high. Tacloban is mostly below about 10 feet, so it just did all kinds of devastation.
Jeff Masters, thank you for being with us, and thank you, Terrence Vallon, and we also thank the others who joined us this hour, Robert LaPrade and Lilibeth Acera and Cesar Torres. And you, our listeners, we wouldn't be here without you. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Gucci, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from Chad McClymans. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, well, stay tuned. Another hour is up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.